Chapter 10 Battle Within, Battle Without. The return trip to Tell proved a little less difficult for Jen. Going through the portals upset his stomach less than it had when they came, and he dealt with the cold with more control. Climbing from the dog sled up the ladder to the portal room at the top of the wooden tower was the hardest. The going was slow, and he nearly fell as numb hands gripped the last rungs of the ladder. Floating up through the murky, freezing water proved easier than trying to sink into it had, and as they dried themselves by the fire and changed clothes, Jen felt his excitement build. He would see Raphael and Regina again, and he was fit to burst with things to tell them. Near dark, they left a grumpy Yudan at his cold camp and headed into the woods with the aid of a lantern the Shadan had Jen carry from the forest pool portal. The night was chill, but the wind spared them as they trudged along in a halo of yellow light that cast tree trunks into long shadows. The Shadan led him a different way back, and Jen wondered if Torbrand was trying to prevent him from remembering where the portal was. At last, Tell came into view, a clump of lifeless buildings squatting in the dark. Due to the late hour, all lights had been extinguished, and only thin wisps of smoke rose from the chimneys. The pleasant smell, something he associated with home. Patrolling guards acknowledged the Shadan expressionlessly. The Shadan opened the door to the Shoals' home.
"Get to bed. We start early tomorrow."
Jen wanted to see Regina and Raphael, but didn't wish to cross the Shadan. He went to his room and slept, but got none of the benefit of it. As soon as his eyes closed, a torrent of images and instructions flowed by, and the lessons were far from comforting. It started with a catalogue of weapons, monsters, and armour. Each item was accompanied by bloody and brutal memories that wrenched Jen from sleep and sickened him to the point of retching into his chamber pot. The stories of war he had learned as a bard hadn't prepared him for corpse-strewn battlefields where orphans wandered in search of fallen parents, or helped him understand the clenching fear of facing down a demon dragged up from the underworld. The songs he knew did not truly reflect of the actual ache of seeing friends torn limb from limb, or the deep sadness of watching as hated enemies trampled beloved people and beautiful places. Before first light, Cairn woke his disturbed and exhausted pupil. Jen was surprised to see the Shadan happy and relaxed, but he stood quickly anyway, not wanting to test the Shadan's patience.
"How did you sleep, Jen?" he inquired with a sardonic grin.
"Poorly," Jen replied tersely.
Torbrand laughed and led him into the great room. Regina was there preparing the morning meal. Her presence comforted Jen. Something about her seemed different, though he couldn't say what. She gave him a questioning look from behind her veil as she set hot rolls and sliced apples before him, and Jen just smiled a reply, not wanting to talk in the Shadan's presence. Torbrand let him eat as much as he wanted, and then led him out into the chill grey morning. A snowstorm blown in during the late hours of the night had stopped, but heavy clouds still obscured the sky. The guards they met in town snapped to attention as their Shadan passed, and Jen noticed the hint of questioning in their eyes as the Shadan led him into the woods after collecting a lantern from the street. The snow was deep, up to Jen's knees, and the bare branches of the trees were heavily enshrouded in white. Jen wondered what Cairn was up to, but didn't have the courage to ask. After an hour of walking, they came to a forest pool that Jen had swum in on many a summer day. It was frozen over and buried with snow.
"Clean the snow off a section and knock a hole in it."
Jen obeyed, though the snow and ice were thick, and it took him almost half an hour to accomplish it with rocks and sticks. Afterward, his hands were bruised and numb. He shivered in his wet cloak, desperately hoping Torbrand didn't expect him to get in the water.
"There are few people who really know much of what they look like. Besides murky reflections, they glimpse in the water. Even fewer know what they look like when they laugh, or cry, or scream out in pain. But we know others' looks well, even to the point where we can tell when they are lying, or hiding something they don't wish to tell. Today I will teach you that you must master the way you look. An intelligent enemy can learn a lot from the face of his opponent, so those that fight must learn absolute control of how they appear. In a fight you must be faceless. Every expression is information that aids the enemy. In a face, an opponent can see fear, arrogance, diffidence, cleverness, and dissembling. And if an opponent knows how you feel, he can exploit your emotion and kill you with it. So look at yourself, Jen, and tell me what you see. What can you tell from your face?
The water was a poor mirror, but there in the wavering pool was a face framed by brown hair, punctuated by two green eyes. It was an ordinary face, a face most wouldn't remember well or look at twice, a face that made people he'd never seen ask if they had met him before. Above all, though, he saw sadness and weariness, every bit of how he felt etched into his features.
"I see someone who is tired," Jen replied.
"Good, but easy enough to tell. Before she left for Ironkeep, I asked my daughter Mina what she could divine about you from her brief time with you. She is a perceptive girl. Would you like to know what she told me?"
"Yes, sir," Jen said, turning away from the pool and sitting on the ice. His master brushed the snow off a nearby stump and sat, hands on his knees.
"She said you are someone used to laughter and smiling. You are polite, you are witty, you have had a good life. You were well-fed, cared for, and loved. She knew you were learned before she heard you speak. You will find that those who have been taught to read and think have a different look to their eyes than those that haven't. She claims that your intelligence has bred some arrogance into you. You leap to defend the weak, but cannot suffer a fool with equanimity, regardless of station, which is odd in your country, where people are forced to fawn on those of rank, even if they are idiots. I applaud the trait, however, and would thank Bernard for teaching it to you. Now I will tell you some things I know. You care for Raphael more than anyone, even the girl. You see her as a young man would, with longing, anticipation, and a little fear. Since I have come, you have indeed grown tired. A sadness and desperation have settled in you as you have realized that no one is coming to deliver you or your village. You have wisely learned to fear me, and know, usually, when to hold your tongue. Mostly, however, there is a cold recognition creeping into your soul and sapping your strength. You are coming to accept your death. How do I hit my mark, Jen?"
"Squarely, sir." Jen felt more depressed than ever. He felt violated.
"And so, by now, you have likely figured out how each thing I have learned about you could be used to control or destroy you. Take Raphael and Regina, for instance. If I wanted to keep you from escaping, even if I hadn't laid the stones upon you, all I would have to do is keep the old man alive and hang his safety over your head. Perhaps if I wanted you to do something, I could promise you that I would free Regina, or not kill her. Without intending to, you have made those you love tools for accomplishing my purposes, chains with which I can enslave you. So what must you do to prevent this from ever happening again? You must be the master of your words and feelings, and the master of body and face. Every slump of the shoulder, every creasing of the brow, every flippant comment, every wide-eyed glance at a passing girl is an arrow in the enemy's quiver. Do you understand this?"
"I do. But how—"
"Quiet, Jen. The lesson is just beginning. Look into the pool and watch your face."
Jen turned back and stared at his countenance wavering in the makeshift mirror, wondering what to expect. He barely caught the flash of the Shadan's blade before pain erupted from a shallow cut along his back.
"Your face! Look at it! Do you see? Nose scrunched, eyes squinting, mouth drawn back. When I see that look on an opponent's face, I know I have won."
Jen slumped to the ice in agony, barely hearing the words. In a moment, the pain faded, replaced by comfortable warmth. The Shadan had healed him, and only bright red stains on the snow and the rent in his shirt and cloak remained. The Shadan sheathed his blade.
"So today you will learn control of your expressions, how you stand, how you sit, how you eat. The stones will help you train your mind and your body more quickly than normal, but it will not be easy. Your face shows emotion more than most, part of being a good bard, I suspect. But now you must put that training behind you. A bard seeks to be the center of attention. Now you must find how to be anonymous. The deadliest snake lies under the rock, unseen and unnoticed, until it strikes. Let's begin.
The rest of that day was spent doing things Jen took for granted. The Shadan pointing out things Jen had never suspected he was communicating with acts as mundane as walking. Cairn would correct him sharply, explaining how walking too fast or too slow meant something, and that a nice, even gait attracted no attention. From time to time during the day, Cairn would unexpectedly cut him and then chide him for the way he reacted to it. After letting him bleed, Cairn would heal him and then have him do something else, like fetch firewood, stand on the side of the road, or drink water. That night, the Shadan left him, Regina, and Raphael alone as he inspected his troops, and Jen told them everything about his trip, his friends amazed at the tale. Regina's mood was muted, though she asked many questions as Jen told his story. As he explained the stones to them, including the limitations they placed upon him, Raphael frowned.
"We were going to come to you in secret tonight and tell you," Raphael whispered, inviting him to draw closer. "While you were gone, we discovered the general schedule and rotation of the guards. This house is guarded by two guards at the front door. There are none at the back during the night, though a brace of soldiers circles the town every half an hour, passing about 50 yards back. We have been greasing the back door, and if we time it right, we can be gone a little after dark and no one may know of our passing until morning. But those stones complicate things."
Ruined them, Jen thought, feeling disappointment and fear. He was disappointed that the stones had undone their plan, and he feared that they would leave without him. Raphael noticed his distress.
"Don't fret, Jen. We'll figure something out. There has to be a way to get those stones off your neck."
They tried to lift them, first singly, then together, but they simply wouldn't budge, as if they weighed more than Jen himself. The Shadan's return sent them scrambling back to their rooms, though Jen suspected that Torbrand had wanted them to talk. That night the lessons he learned during the day were reinforced in his mind by Samian, Elberon, and Telmeron. The next day he had difficulty focusing as the Shadan set him to a variety of exercises meant to increase his stamina and speed, still slicing him at random intervals and healing him later. If the lessons had stayed as they were, even with the cuts, Jen figured he could have survived and kept up hope. But each day grew steadily more brutal. Once Torbrand was satisfied he could do mundane things without giving away anything, and once he saw Jen could take a cut or two without flinching, he began to teach him the sword. The thought of learning the sword from Cairn, a renowned master, excited him, but little did he know how the half-mad Shadan would school his student. Along with the expected training on how to stand, move, defend, and attack, Cairn would maim him and show him how to fight while injured. Although the injuries were always painful at first, they were at least comparatively tame. A broken finger, a bleeding gash on the forehead, a turned ankle. Cairn would always heal him in the end, but the daily pain and restless nights slowly sapped Jen of his will. And it only got worse. Soon came fighting with a shattered arm, then a shattered leg. One day Cairn had one of his soldiers smash his pelvis with a warhammer. Jen spent the whole day writhing in the snow as Cairn taught him how to attack and defend from the ground, should such an eventuality occur. The dreams at night were little better. Samian taught where to aim arrows to quickly butcher every kind of creature that walked Kihal. Telmarin's lessons on quickly overtaking a village in the dark were made even more poignant by the memories of Tel's own fall. Elberon's memories of ruthlessly destroying Uyumark camps and infantry lines had Jen's mind swimming with gore for a week. How to fight on horse and off. How to fight enemies who were quicker, stronger, or magical. How to fight alone and how to command an army. How to attack a tower. How to invade a keep. What to do against demons, evil pure men, and massive gagons. Everything seemed a jumble. And just when Jen thought there could be nothing left for them to teach, they showed him more. Every morning he awoke to a splitting headache, and in an attempt to get just one good night's rest, He tried for a solid hour to remove the stones. No trickery of his succeeded. Any attempt to do so was met with numbness that prevented him from raising his arms above his head. He even tried standing on his head to let them slide off, but to no avail. He had no doubt Cairn could hear him banging to the floor with each attempt and was giggling madly. In the end, Jen had no choice but to sleep, but he found he could only grab snatches before waking again from the constant nightmare. One cloudy afternoon, Cairn blinded him and took to throwing rocks at him and swinging his sword around him from every angle so he could hear what it sounded like. Then the Shadan set his chuckling soldiers to firing arrows around and then at his student. Jen tried to dodge out of the way by sensing the path of the arrows from the sound. The only reason the lesson stopped, Jen supposed, was that Cairn had tired of healing him, for Jen knew the Shadan had limits on what he could do without rest. Getting the arrows out of his body without killing him taxed Torbrand to exhaustion. After being healed at the end of the lesson, Jen entered through the front door of the Schultz's old residence feeling a great emptiness. His clothes were permanently stained a dried blood brown, no matter what Regina tried when she cleaned and mended them. Jen walked as Torbrand trained him, showing nothing of his tiredness, but he didn't even see the food before him. When Regina and Raphael tried to talk to him, faces grave, he didn't respond, going to his room and closing the door behind him. They hadn't talked about escape for weeks. Raphael and Regina pitied and feared him, and seeing them at the table every evening only tortured him more. He heard Torbrand come in just after him and order food and music, yelling at his friends as if they were nothing more than cattle, but for some reason Jen could not find the heart to care about them or even himself. As he slept, the voices of the disembodied warriors continued to instruct him with scene after scene of death and slaughter, each analyzed in cold, dispassionate voices. He awoke in the deep night. It was quiet, and he found himself weeping, but not because of the pain or for fear of the coming day, but because he finally saw the monster that he was becoming. He knew exactly how to invade any home in Tell and kill its inhabitants so quickly that there would likely not even be a scream. When he saw his friends and neighbors chopping wood or hanging clothes or talking in groups, he instantly knew the best way to kill them all. And while his mind constantly dwelt on fighting, the stones changed his body, tightening and growing muscles, increasing his reflexes and speed, limbering his sinews and ligaments, sharpening his hearing and sight, enhancing his voice. But all for a purpose, all to make him deadly. While the stones' lessons were meant to help him protect the Shalane and the Ha'ulric, the Shadans were not. Torbrand Cairn took sick pleasure in hurting his student, in moulding him into an opponent he could have some fun with before killing him and the rest of Tell's inhabitants. Jen lay in the dark, thinking how his whole life revolved around killing. Those things he liked most about himself, the same things he hoped others liked about him, gradually slipped away. His mirth, his art, his courage were all alien memories to him now. He hadn't sung or even talked to anyone meaningfully in weeks. These realizations sent him spiraling down into a despair he didn't want to feel but could not control. And in these depths, and in the dark alone, he made an attempt to end his life, to stop the constant suffering and abort the birth of the Shadan's monster. Tying his bedsheet into a convenient noose, he secured one end around his neck and another to a rafter, and stepped off of his bed. The Shadan was there almost before his feet could leave the bed frame to dangle free in the air. With a flick of the wrist, he sliced the sheet in two, sending Jen crashing to the floor, a sobbing wreck. Torbrand stared at him for some time, and then ordered a soldier to take everything from his student's room. He had Omar fetch a rope and bind Jen so he couldn't move.
"If you try to kill yourself again, I will kill Raphael," Torbrand growled.
Jen slept little that night, and if the Shadan felt any sympathy for him the next morning, he didn't show it, bashing in one side of his ribs and making him fight. As further punishment, Torbrand beat Raphael with Jen as the lone audience. Jen felt strangely distant, and even Raphael's bruises and grunts of pain couldn't break him from his cocoon of misery. Every day dawned more pointless than the next. Jen longed for death. At least in dying, he would deny Cairn his pleasure.